Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, on this Tuesday, June 20th, and today we are going to be talking all about monk seals and some of the controversial topics that surround them. It is also the year of the monk seal, and I'm happy to learn more about this endemic species over the next hour. We'll leave no topic uncovered, speaking with two of Hawaii's critical experts working with monk seals. Here with us today in the studio is Dr. Michelle Barbieri and Angela Amlin. Michelle is the protected species veterinarian with NOAA Pacific Islands Fisheries Science Center, and Angela is the Hawaiian monk seal recovery coordinator with NOAA Pacific Islands Regional Office. Angela, welcome to the show, and Michelle, it's so nice to have you back here with us today.
Thank you, Carly.
Thanks.
So first off, let's talk a little bit about monk seals. Where are they found, and why is there so much interest in monk seals?
Well, Angela and I are probably a little bit biased because we study monk seals and we work with them quite a bit. So we think they're really interesting, valuable creatures just as they are. But they're also very interesting because in Hawaii, they're the only pinnipeds that we have. They're native to Hawaii and they're the only tropical pinniped in the world. And when I say pinniped, we're talking specifically about animals like seals and sea lions. So they're really interesting in that regard as well. So they do have some very cool adaptations to living in tropical environments. There's a lot of interest in Hawaiian monk seals in the main Hawaiian islands because they're not something that, you know, if you've talked to people that have lived here for generations, maybe they haven't actually been used to seeing them around. And here now, we see monk seals almost every day. So you can go to Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and maybe even Maui and the Big Island at times and be fairly likely to see a monk seal. They're recolonizing parts of their former range. And so that is where humans and seals are intersecting more. And that means that we have a lot more to talk about with respect to coexisting.
And I mean, I know there's a lot of excitement, too, when you go down to the beach. Even in Waikiki, we've seen monk seals there, and they're just kind of lying there. They look dead, but they're not. They're just resting. And I think one of the things I think is so interesting about monk seals is that, you know, they're kind of conquering land and water. You know, they're out in the ocean, but also an ocean animal that you can interact with on land. So really neat. Angela, what about you? What drew you to monk seals?
They're just such an interesting species in that they have such a small population. They're only found in this one place in the world. And what you can really see with our program is the data have been collected over the years such that we know for a fact that about a third of monk seals that are alive today are alive because of life-saving interventions that our program and our partners have performed. And so being in conservation, it's really challenging, and you often come up against a lot of difficulties. But when you get to see a program like this and an animal like this, where you have a lot of investment and you're starting to see some success, that's just something that's really exciting to be a part of.
It's got to feel good to go home at the end of the day and be like, I am a monk seal hero. Very rewarding work day. So working with monk seals is obviously an incredibly rewarding job, but challenging too. And there are multiple concerns about their health. Can we talk about some of these overarching issues?
Well, you mentioned health. And as a veterinarian, that's definitely one of the aspects of monk seals being both rewarding and challenging that I can talk about. When it comes to seals in need here in the main Hawaiian Islands, a lot of the threats we see are with respect to fisheries interactions. So I can't tell you how many three-day weekends seem to be compromised by seals getting reported as hooked, and we go on a scavenger hunt looking for said seal for anywhere from hours to days. And then once we get our hands on them, then we are looking for an opportunity to remove that hook, whether it's on the beach or something more invasive requiring anesthesia and surgery at a facility. So that is definitely a challenging but also rewarding aspect, because fisheries interactions are one of those things that a lot of times we can mitigate if the public, and we do have a very responsive public, volunteer groups on the islands, and also just the general public is aware of the sighting line more and more all the time. And so they let us know what's going on with these animals. And when they are reported, if we can get to the animals in a reasonable period of time, we really can mitigate that threat. One of the other things that we are you know, challenged by are some of those health threats that we can't necessarily remove as easily. And sure. those are things like diseases, pathogens. And we're lucky we don't have a lot of those in monk seals, but there are a few of great concern. For some of these things, we vaccinate monk seals against. And in other cases, we really do have to rely on treatment and supporting them through it. And they don't always make it.
I want to circle back to something you said, if you find if a volunteer or someone in the field or just someone on the beach finds a monk seal with a hook in its mouth or an injured monk seal or whatever it is and they call it in, you know, you say you go out and if it's safe conditions, you'll remove it. But I know there's a lot of thought process that goes into this, and it's not just a matter of going and pulling a hook out of a seal's mouth. You know, there's a lot of experience and steps that are taken. Can you kind of walk us through what a procedure would look like or a kind of a decision tree of how you would go and intervene with an animal?
Sure. Yeah, you're right in that they are complicated creatures, and we really are particular about how we go about these rescues. Even though on the beach, they might just look like they're snoozing and taking a nap and seem sure. pretty harmless, adult seals can weigh several hundred pounds. So that's a lot of weight that gets thrown around. And even though they do look sleepy, as soon as they're disturbed, we know from all the times we've had to handle them that they become a completely different animal. And they do have sharp, bitey teeth, and they can spiral around and throw you off of them pretty rapidly. So there is a lot of handling experience that needs to go into catching a monk seal. We also know that here in Hawaii, we don't really have substrates that are all ideal for catching a seal. So it's really easy when it's on a sandy beach to deal with all of those variables that the seal can throw at you. But things like tide pools and rocky ledges and cliffs and stuff like that, they're pretty much off limits for us to handle these animals. So the seals do have to, in a way, meet us halfway because we do need to capture them safely. We have an abundance of safety checks and protocols and procedures that we go through. We do accept a little bit more risk for rescues, but not to the point where we're further endangering the life of that seal. For hooks that are visible, maybe like in the lip or the corner of the mouth or something like that, most of the time, those are the ones we worry the least about. They're not terribly life-threatening. Yes, we want to remove them, but not at the expense of the seal getting, you know, flushed off the side of a rocky ledge by accident and something else happening to it that sure. wasn't as dangerous. So we do really think hard about how we go about those procedures. It's complex at times.
I'm sure it is. And, you know, I'm sure every case is a little bit different, too.
Indeed.
And so it's not just a matter, you know, you talked about vaccines and health concerns, but I know the monk seal program is fairly large and you guys do a lot to help the species. Can you walk us through some of the different types of programs that you have?
Sure. So we have kind of a three-pronged program. There's research, recovery, and response. And all of these pieces are tied together and interact with each other. I'm in the recovery program, and so we rely heavily on the research program to give us the science so that we make sure that the management stuff that we're implementing is going to be successful. Response is a lot of what Michelle was just talking about, going out and dehooking seals, disentangling. We rely really heavily, as she mentioned, on the public for reporting those kinds of things. Recovery also involves things like education and outreach and stakeholder engagement and making sure that we're working with all the partners and with the public in Hawaii. And I'll let Michelle touch a little bit more on some of what the research program does.
Yeah, for research, I mentioned earlier that the monk seal is recolonizing here in the main Hawaiian Islands, a former part of its range. But in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, that's where the majority of the population lives. And we do a lot of research in that aspect of the archipelago as well. So there are seasonal field camps that are put out across the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. They are there to do population assessment. They monitor the health of animals. They even intervene as far as disentangling seals from marine debris. They mitigate aggression between seals that is too escalating to the point where it's endangering animal health. They are actually vaccinating seals this year, and we're in very close contact with them as they're going about all of those activities. The research is really the backbone of everything we know about this population and the trends in the population. And so for many decades, there have been population assessment studies that have been going on in order to help us understand this species better. And those are the things that we lean on so heavily to make decisions when it comes to things like translocating animals around, rehabilitating, all of those different types of interventions that Angela mentioned earlier. So without that backbone, we wouldn't really be able to measure the value of our efforts.
Seems rare in conservation to have such a amazing wealth of information and such a long-standing baseline. You know, when research started, it was in the 70s or the 60s, or mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty hefty data set to be able to rely on.
Yeah, it really is. We are unique in many ways when it comes to studying marine wildlife in particular.
And you mentioned vaccinations a couple times. What are you vaccinating against?
We're vaccinating against morbillivirus, and that's quite a mouthful. But to put it into context that many people can relate to, morbilliviruses are a group of viruses. They include things you might be familiar with, like measles, which is a morbillivirus of humans, or distemper, which if you have a pet dog at home and you take your puppy to the veterinarian, one of the things that they get vaccinated against is distemper. So this is a virus of concern to us because other seal populations in other parts of the world have actually suffered die-offs in the order of thousands to tens of thousands of animals. So these outbreaks are sustained by these populations because those are much bigger. But in Hawaiian monk seals, again, from these decades of research, we know that they haven't previously been exposed. That means that they're naive. And if they were exposed, they don't have any pre-existing immunity to a morbillivirus. So we want to protect them with vaccinating them because we just don't have a population size that we think could withstand that level of an outbreak. So, and we haven't actually talked about the size of the population, but we think there's around 1,400 monk seals. So if you compare that to those other populations that have sustained outbreaks where thousands of seals have died, we just can't let that happen.
Sure. And are you aiming to vaccinate the whole population? I imagine it'd be hard to get all 1,400 monk seals.
Indeed. Yes. We are not aiming to vaccinate the entire population, but the purpose of these efforts is to get what we call herd immunity. And that is a term that helps us look at the population level immunology. So if they're protected enough that you break the links between individuals, because this is spread by respiratory or close contact, if you have enough seals that are protected and won't continue to spread it around, then you can stop the cycle of disease transmission and prevent anything catastrophic from occurring. So we may not protect every single individual, but we do want to protect the bulk of the population.
And one of the interesting things about the population that we're working with, this is the first ever effort to vaccinate a wild population of marine mammals. And one of the reasons we're able to do that is because it is so small of a population, so it's kind of a benefit in this case. And I think about 85% of the seals are known to us by identifiers like tags or scars. And so we can actually track, okay, which seals have we vaccinated, which ones have received their boosters. So it's not as necessarily as feasible to do with a larger population with animals that aren't as easily identifiable.
Like humans, although we try. We try really hard. And when seals do get sick, Hawaii Island is home to a fairly new monk seal hospital. How did that come about? Is that related to what you guys do? And what kind of goes down at the monk seal hospital?
Well, this is a facility called Ke Kai Ola, which means the healing sea. And it is run by a nonprofit organization called the Marine Mammal Center. They have several decades of experience rehabilitating injured, sick, and stranded marine mammals, mostly in California. And they have been working with us on monk seals for many years. The need for a purposefully built facility to rehabilitate Hawaiian monk seals was recognized quite a while ago, and it took a long time for them to get it up and running and raise the funds that were necessary to build that. But now that it's there, it is a place of refuge for monk seals that are struggling to get by in the population. One of the other things that we haven't yet touched on is that malnutrition and just starvation are things that can take monk seals out of the population. And in the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands, that is a very real threat. It prevents juveniles from reaching reproductive maturity and continuing on the population, essentially. So when we're there for our other research activities, we now have the ability to bring these animals to the facility on the Big Island, give them the supportive care and nutrition that they need. And then when we go back up to the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands, can release them back at their homes. And so that facility there is open for folks to come visit. You can't go in and view the animals directly, but check out their website. They have a lot of great information. Give them a call if you're on the Big Island. The facility is near the airport in Kona, and it's a pretty quick drive from the airport. So they have a lot of modules now where you can go learn more about monk seals, and you can see the animals on screen and learn about the specific individuals that they're caring for at whatever point in time you stop by.
How many animals will they have at any one point in time in the hospital?
It varies. It's ranged from 0 to 7. 7's the most that they've had at one time. So generally it's around 2 or 4. And right now there are 2 seals there that we just brought down on our cruise that got back about a week and a half ago.
Excellent. Well, I want to hear more about that cruise and a lot more about monk seals. We're going to take a quick traffic break, and when we return, we're going to chat more about monk seals and toxoplasmosis and the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands.
A few gray hairs or wrinkles around the eyes might bother some people, but not me. I couldn't be happier. You see, 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a kind of cancer. I wasn't sure I'd be around for my next birthday, let alone live to see the signs of aging some folks fret about. All I could think about was that I'd be missing the big events in the lives of my 3 daughters. Graduations, weddings, grandchildren. As I cried myself to sleep, I knew I was in the fight of my life. But I got help and hope from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Thanks in part to the life-saving research they fund, survival rates for lymphoma and other blood cancers have increased dramatically. So far, I'm beating this thing. My cancer's in remission. Who knows what the future holds? But if living longer means more gray hairs and wrinkles, I'll take them. To find out how you can help, call 888-HELP-LLS or visit lls.org. I'm Kathleen Magby Brown, and with the help of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, I'm relentless for a cure.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are talking about monk seals with Dr. Michelle Barbieri and Angela Amlin. We are just chatting about some of the efforts that have been going into helping to protect Hawaii's monk seals, and also alluded to some work happening in the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument or Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. So, Michelle and Angela, I know you guys just completed a cruise recently up to the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. And when I say cruise, I mean a research expedition, not a pleasure voyage. But let's talk about how these expeditions went and what exactly you guys did up there.
Well, like I said, we got back about a week and a half ago, and it was a 3-week long cruise. This is on one of the NOAA ships. So we were aboard the Oscar Elton Seti, and the activities on these cruises are so varied. It ranges from marine debris removal to releasing seals that have been at Cape Kaiola in rehabilitation, and most importantly, setting up the field camps that I mentioned a few minutes ago. So we take up on the ship everything that between 2 and 4 people per island will need to conduct their research activities and live for several months on a deserted island in the middle of the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. So that means we're taking some solar panels to run their computers, and we're taking all of the food that they need to eat for the entire summer, all of the water that they're going to need to drink, all those basic necessities. We're setting up their tents where everything goes ashore in either pallet tubs or buckets. I can't tell you how many times we've transferred all of these buckets back and forth between the ship and the little boat and the beach. Mm-hmm. So it's quite an endeavor, and it's a process by which we really have to put in a lot of physical effort to get these camps set up. And once we do, then they go out and begin their season. On our way back down the chain, as the ship is returning to Honolulu, we stop off again and do specific activities that they might need help with, whether something's malfunctioned and we need to swap it out, or they want some additional training on a particular aspect of their research activities. This year, because we are vaccinating seals, we spent a lot of focus doing that as well and getting everybody up to speed with that program, since it's the first time we're doing that in the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. So that's the the cruise in a nutshell. I wish I had a number for you, but we did pull off quite a bit of marine debris that had been picked up and bagged up on previous missions was not able to get all the way back down because we just didn't have space for it. So we were able to get a lot of marine debris off of Midway. It's really a multi-pronged approach. We do both direct seal saving things and indirectly saving seals and measuring the population.
Sounds incredible, and a lot of logistics too. So how many people are now in these field camps and how long are they there for?
Yeah, so they're going to be there until, most of the camps will be there until the middle of August, end of August, when we go back to pick them up. Like I said, there's 2 to 4 people per camp. So we're just talking, you know, about 15 people. And they will, over the course of the season, their activities will somewhat change. So they'll focus on different things at different times of the year. Right now, they're really paying a lot of attention to weaned pups that are needing tags because they're new additions to the population. So it's really important to get those animals individually identified so that we can track them throughout their lives and understand juvenile survival from year to year so that we can, again, continue to have a pretty good grasp on what's happening in the population and all of those threats.
Excellent. And so you said before the commercial break that some of the monk seals that you find in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands will come down to the monk seal hospital. How do you determine what seals to bring down, and do they go back up to the same place they're found?
Yes, so they do always go back to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. So if we bring them here to the facility on the Big Island, they are bound to that facility until the next cruise is available. So we essentially have 2 research cruises a year. One's usually at the beginning of the summer, one's at the end of the summer. So the seals that are at Ke Kaiola are getting released on one or the other of those cruises each year. Most of the time when we select seals for rehabilitation, they're ones that are struggling to get by. The priority is generally on females, not necessarily because we want it to only be restricted to females, more so because they're the ones that are essential for continuing the species. Sure. So with limited resources, we do have to prioritize those females. And all of the seals that we've brought in to date, and we're right now at 22 seals since 2014, they are struggling to get by because of nutritional resources. So they just aren't either finding enough food, they aren't finding the right kinds of food, they may have so much competition for the same bits of food that they're going for from other predators that they're just not foraging successfully enough to have a good body size that we think is going to be associated with survival. And we also bring in pups that may be weaned prematurely. And so if mom left too soon, whether something happened to her or she just didn't have enough resources herself to transfer those to the pup, we don't always know. But suffice to say that those smaller weaned pups we know are just not likely to survive until the next year. So we'll bring them in and give them the groceries that they need really to get back out there and do their thing.
That's amazing. And have you seen any of the seals that you've brought in as pups to the hospital and re-released? Have they been spotted in the wild?
Yep. I can't tell you quite yet what it's going to look like because the camps just got out there. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a full count yet, but already 2 of those seals have been re-sighted and look to be doing really well from the last batch that we released. And then several others from previous years are also being re-sighted. So
it's good. That's going to feel amazing.
It does. And we know that they're still just as susceptible to some of those other threats. I mean, no matter how many calories we can give them in rehabilitation, we can't remove the entanglement risk. We can't remove the predation risk. We can't, you know, mitigate those things for them. But really, just by getting them back out there with a good blubber store, we're hopefully helping with the malnutrition component.
Sure. And a few years back, you know, we heard a lot about the declining numbers of monk seals, and I thought the number was a little bit less than 1,400, what you quoted today. Does that mean the population is on the rise?
Yeah, we've seen since 2013 a sustained average of 3% increase. So we've got now a total of 1,400 animals. Going back a little more than a few years, there was a really big decline in the 1800s due to hunting and things like that. And then the population slowly started coming up. we have this information from historical data. And then World War II, there's a lot of activity in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, and that really just sent the population down again. So as you mentioned, we have data dating back 70s, 60s. I think our earliest counts are from the 50s. So we had these declines that were as steep as 10% per year going on for decades. And then they kind of started slowing. I think it was about a 4% per year in the early 2000s. And now we've finally seen this 3% increase over the last few years. We're seeing stability in the Northwesterns for the first time in a long time. So that's all really good news.
Oh, that's excellent. And we've heard a lot about toxoplasmosis recently. And to be honest, I hadn't heard a lot about that in the past. It seems to be something that's come up a lot more frequently now. For the people that haven't heard about this, what exactly is it and how is it affecting monk seals?
Well, I'll start with what is it? And it is a complex little thing. So this is actually a parasite. So it's called Toxoplasma gondii. That's the genus and species name of this parasite. And it's a good parasite in the sense that it is a very successful parasite. And it is pervasive across warm-blooded animals. Probably about a quarter or more of the human population has been exposed to it and is infected, and we don't even know it. So it's really a fascinating, from a parasite standpoint, it's really a fascinating thing. Its definitive host is the cat, or felids in general. In Hawaii, we're just talking about cats because we don't have mountain lions or bobcats or any wild felids here. And what definitive host means, in as simple terms as I can describe it, is that the parasite sexually reproduces in the intestine of a cat, and it can only do that in the intestines of a cat. And that means that cats can spread the eggs into the environment where they hope to get picked up by another cat so that they can complete their life cycle. The way they do that, though, is through something called an intermediate host. So even though a cat can continue the life cycle just on its own, this intermediate host is, by no accident, prey of cats. And it can, when it's exposed to those eggs that are put into the environment in cat feces, they sequester them into their tissues, so into their brain or muscle. And the prey items of the cats will then be consumed as prey, and it continues the life cycle that way. What's unfortunate is that at times those eggs can get into other species, and that can be, again, any warm-blooded animal. So it can be, instead of just a bird or a rodent that's cat prey, it could be a monk seal. It could be a dolphin. It could be a pig. It could be a cat or a dog that's a pet that's just getting exposed in other ways. So the issue with toxoplasmosis is that we've had multiple mortalities in monk seals from this. It is a really rapid decline that we see in these animals. We don't necessarily have a cure for it, nor do we have a way to prevent it with a vaccine. And again, it's just so widely spread in the environment that we don't have a really good opportunity to mitigate it from the seal side. So when it comes to mitigating things like fisheries interactions, we can see hooks, we can remove them. With toxoplasmosis in monk seals, we don't know that they're sick until they show us that they're really sick. And at that point, we really don't have a lot of tools in our toolbox. The only way that we can help seals is to prevent their exposure in the first place to those eggs. And the way to do that is, unfortunately, requiring something other than just what we can do with seals. And that's looking at the cat issue specifically.
So I'm sure a lot of our listeners are wondering, is this, you know, is my pet cat at home spreading this toxoplasmosis? Can I get it? Are we talking more feral cats? And how do people help to prevent the spread of toxoplasmosis?
Yeah, well, anyone who is pregnant has been pregnant in the past has probably heard from their doctor that this is something that can be a risk to them if they have cats at home. And that might be the way that some listeners are most familiar with it. And it's really not a risk that is without a mitigation for people. So if your cat is kept indoors, it's not going to be out there preying on birds and mice and continuing that life cycle.
Sure.
So it's very unlikely that anyone's going to get sick from their indoor cat. If your cat is roaming outside or and you're cleaning the litter box, then that can pose a risk. There are a few more specific things around that. So those eggs actually take anywhere between 24 hours and a couple of days to become infectious. So pregnant women that clean the litter box every day and are very good about it are really at quite a minimal risk for exposure. But it does pose a risk to people through food consumption as well. So if there is produce that's not washed that may be contaminated with these eggs, then that's a way of people being exposed. We talk about it being shed in the feces of cats. The feces might degrade in the environment and wash away, but those eggs are really sturdy and strong in the environment. So they actually can live in fresh water. They can live in the dirt. They can live in salt water. And they can do that for many months, even up to like 2 years. So it's not as much of a, it's not a threat that you can see. So you can't see these eggs. They're not something that you can easily detect. And then the other way that people often can get exposed is through undercooked meat. So if you happen to be out hunting, you shoot a pig that was exposed and has those tissue cysts sitting in its brain or in its muscle tissue, when you eat that meat, if it's not cooked properly, then you can get that infection in that way. So the complexities of this parasite are many, and when it comes to thinking about how that applies to monk seals, it makes it even more challenging. And that's because they are animals that forage widely. Sure. They range across islands. They go out to sea for days at a time. Seals have a very diverse diet, and they also therefore probably have multiple different ways that they may be exposed. They're hard to study in that way. A lot of what we know about toxoplasmosis in marine mammals in general comes from what we've learned about otters in California. And, yep.
Yeah, so not high risk to humans, but high enough risk to monk seals. And people may wonder, well, monk seals are on the beach or in the ocean. How are they coming into contact with cat feces? Is it through waterways? Is it through areas, you know, where you see a lot of feral cats congregate? Or how do you spread that?
So it's really a Mauka to Makai issue in the sense that feces can enter the system anywhere. If there's cats way up in the ko'olau's and it rains, and as Michelle said, those eggs can last for months, 18 months, 2 years, they'll slowly make their way down. So it's not necessarily just cats that are found right on the beach. It's really anywhere in the system. There's a couple different possibilities for ways that monk seals are getting exposed. It could be directly through exposure on sand or in water. The other is through filter feeders, through their prey. If there's another species that's taking up toxo eggs that are in the water and then they're concentrating in that animal, since it's a cold-blooded invertebrate, it's not going to create those same tissue cysts. It's not going to multiply the way it does in a bird or a mammal, but they would act as kind of a little storage repository.
Sure.
And then if the monk seal consumed that, then it could get it that way. And Michelle mentioned otters. A lot of what we know about toxo and marine mammals is through otters, because they're nice subjects in that they bring their food up to the surface and lay there with it. And so you can see what they're eating. So they've been able to see that that's the route of exposure there. It remains to be seen if that's the primary route here.
So it seems to me people that have cats, how they can help is, you know, spay and neuter their pets and make sure they keep them inside. And I don't know, are we looking at reducing feral cat populations as well with to help the spread of toxoplasmosis?
Yeah, so really, as we've kind of been alluding to here, there's not much we can do directly with monk seals. We can't vaccinate them. We can't cure
Sure.
them. So reducing the amount of cats that are outside and the amount of toxo that's being shed into the environment is really the way to address it. So as you mentioned, spaying and neutering, keeping your cats indoors, really any way that keeps the population limited. And we've got estimates that range from estimates of feral cat populations on Oahu alone that range from 50,000 to 300,000. We don't know exactly how many. They reproduce quickly. Yeah, there's tons of cats. They reproduce quickly. People tend to dump them, abandon them, unfortunately. So that's another huge thing. If you're no longer able to care for a pet, take it to a shelter.
Another big one, and this can be a difficult one, is not to feed feral cats. Supporting those populations is really aiding in their survival and reproduction. It's keeping those feral cat populations going, and it's putting more toxoplasma into the environment.
Sure. So obviously this is somewhat of a concern. How much of a concern is it in terms of the other threats to monk seals? Is this our number one concern, or is it more, you know, a side effect of bigger issues that the monk seals face?
It's the number one disease concern in the main Hawaiian Islands, and it also ranks up there with other threats like fishing interactions or even intentional harm. The difference here is that we're limited in what we can do. If a member of the public calls in a hooked seal, we can go get that seal. We can remove the hook, and we have a really good success rate with helping these seals. So while it may be about on par with some of these other threats, it's in a sense much more dangerous because there's so much less that we can do about it. It's also so difficult to detect. By the time you start observing symptoms or among seals exhibiting signs that it's ill, the disease has progressed really far already. And so it's not something that we can jump in early and track easily that way.
And in fact, most of the seals that have died from toxoplasmosis, we didn't even know they were sick until we found a dead seal on a beach. So, you know, that's one of the most challenging aspects of this. And we can't tell whether or not they've been exposed until they show signs of being sick. One of the other complicating things about this is that we think that more animals, just in general, from what we know from other species, are probably exposed and don't get sick than are exposed and get sick. So we know that there are some animals out there that have been exposed to toxoplasma but haven't gotten sick and died. So it is very interesting to dig into some of those questions. But the point of our concerns are that we really just don't have a way to detect that without getting hands on a seal. We can do blood tests to look to see if they're exposed, but we sure can't go out and test all the seals all the time just to wait and see and pick out which ones, you know, have been newly exposed or make it sick, or it's just not realistic. So we want to do more things than we can, but it's just a very challenging threat for the species.
Sure. Well, an important issue. Where can people go to learn more about toxoplasmosis if they're curious or interested?
There are several good resources online. However, there's also a lot of information on the internet, as we know with anything on the internet, that's not necessarily factually correct. So I would caution folks to, you know, be really careful about what you read and go look at the sources that are being used. Because this is such a controversial topic, we definitely see a lot of misinformation or partial information spread around. And that is concerning because we want to make sure that people understand this complex topic comprehensively. And the best resources are the scientific literature. And if that's not something that you're familiar with, we are always available as resources to help direct people in that way. The information on the cases of toxoplasmosis in monk seals is published in the scientific peer-reviewed literature for people to read. And then there are some really good fact sheets out there as well. So the American Veterinary Medical Association has a good fact sheet on toxoplasmosis in cats and human health threats. The CDC gives a lot of information about the human health side of that as well. So just be mindful of your sources and do keep that in the forefront.
Solid advice. Well, thank you so much, both of you. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more monk seals.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness can all be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk. But a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. Call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal, and today we are talking with Michelle and Angela from NOAA's Monk Seal Program about the very real issues surrounding the Hawaiian monk seals. We just went into a very in-depth conversation about toxoplasmosis. We've talked about rescuing monk seals and the wild fisheries interactions and starvation. Man, these seals have a rough life.
It's not easy.
So let's talk about something a little more positive. This year was declared the Year of the Monk Seal. So what does that mean and how do we celebrate monk seals?
So it's a chance, as I kind of said earlier, that, you know, when you get these victories in conservation, I think it's really important to take note of them, to focus on them, and to really celebrate what can happen when in ideal situations when things are coming together and going well. So we declared it the Year of the Monk Seal partially to celebrate the population increase, and also partially it's the 10-year anniversary of the signing of the Monk Seal Recovery Plan, which doesn't sound like a very exciting thing, but what this document was is it was really the birth of our program in its current form, which is a very proactive, management-focused, hands-on, you know, life-saving interventions we've been talking about type program. So we wanted to acknowledge that anniversary and that milestone and then to set the tone for the next 10 years and more of monk seal conservation work to come.
So how long has the program been running for?
Oh my goodness, since the 80s, there's been an official monk seal program since the 80s, but sort of the structure has changed over the years, and the way that it's formed right now with these three different branches has been more of a last 10 to 15 years.
Excellent. And so have there been special events? I know there was something at Ko'olina last weekend that talked about monk seals, or what kind of ways are you celebrating?
Yeah, so every month throughout this year, we're having a series of events and activities. We've got five different goals with these. Those are to raise awareness and educate people about monk seals, focus on integrating monk seals in Hawaiian culture, work on advancing our science and building capacity both within our program and with the collaborations with our partners. And then, as I mentioned, to build momentum for the decade to come. The event at Ko'olina is an example of one of our fun and community engagements. We had a bunch of activities for Keiki. We had a sunset screening of Moana on the beach, some short films about marine debris and Keiki Ola and the work that they do. So yeah, that's just one example, but we've had a lot of smaller festivals. We've had some bigger things as well. And so
excellent. What do you have planned for the rest of the year? Anything exciting on the calendar?
Yeah, so we are working on a monk seal art show. Ooh. That will be in November. We also have an announcement coming out hopefully this week for a photo competition that will lead to a monk seal calendar. So all of the adorable fuzzy cuteness that is monk seals. We've been talking on the science side of things, but they are cute. And so we'll be announcing that soon. We have some other smaller things like talk story sessions. We'll be doing one on the west side next month and going out and working with other school groups.
Oh, excellent. So hitting a variety of different audiences and different types of events. That's fantastic. And so I know there's a lot of work done in the community. How are you interacting with both seals and the communities that the seals are found in, and what kind of programs do you offer? I know there's a volunteer program, and I know you're doing a bunch of outreach as well. So
yeah, so we do try to do, as you said, a bunch of different ways of engaging the community. Not everyone has the same interests or you know, recreates in the same way or might interact with seals in the same way. If you hang out on the beach or if you fish, you might encounter them in two different ways. So we do everything from going into classrooms, we go to fishing expos, and as you mentioned, the volunteers, they actually go out onto the beaches and they interact with local community, they interact with the public, they provide information on monk seal biology and conservation. They'll set up little signs and try to guide people as far as responsible wildlife viewing practices, you know, keep your distance and try not to disturb them. And The volunteer program is different on every island as far as who coordinates it. Here it's our partners, the Hawaii Marine Mammal Alliance. And if people are interested in learning about what they do or in ways to get involved with them, their website is monkseals.org. That's a monk
easy to remember.
Plural. Yeah. And so, yeah, we rely heavily on our volunteers for being a big arm of our community outreach part of our program.
And, you know, that's really great to hear because not always people working in conservation are engaging in the community. What kind of feedback have you received from the community?
I think that community attitudes and, you know, the level of interest and engagement back with us has just really gotten to be positive, more and more positive in the last few years. I think the more that we're out there and the more people know, also the more the population increases and the more used to seals people get. Mm-hmm. The more that people are really starting to take ownership of them and view them as a community resource and something to be protected and respected.
Excellent. And I know the Hawaii Conservation Conference, which happens every year, is a big conference here in Hawaii. We've had them on the show before, but it really engages all of our Makoto Makai conservationists and scientists talking about topics. It'll be coming up next month at Hawaii Convention Center. Are you guys going to be doing anything and being involved with the conference?
We are, and there will actually be three sessions that might be of interest to listeners. So there will be one monk seal ecology session that'll be an hour long about different talks from folks in the research program. After that, and I think these are all back-to-back-to-back at the conference, after that there will be an hour long set of talks specifically about toxoplasmosis, not just in monk seals, but in Hawaii's native wildlife. And then after that, there will be a panel to actually have a more spirited dialogue and get the conversation rolling about the toxoplasmosis concerns that we have for native wildlife in Hawaii.
Well, obviously, it's a big deal if it has its own panel and conference. Who will we see on the panel there?
We're going to have representatives from a lot of different organizations, and it was really important to us to represent different stakeholder groups and different viewpoints. And so we'll have folks from American Bird Conservancy, International Fund for Animal Welfare, Hawaiian Humane Society, the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project. There'll be some agency folks, including some people from a monk seal program. We'll have also the county, city county of Honolulu will be there, and some local and mainland academic institutions.
Excellent. And will this be a public event, or will this be something that you need to register for the conference to participate in?
So the conference itself, you need to register for, but they do have a public open session, which is taking place. This toxoplasmosis panel and symposium are taking place during the public open session.
Excellent. Well, that's great to know. Good. Any other presentations that will be happening that people should know about?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Well, there's a lot of great stuff that's going to be going on, though, and they just came out with the schedule, I think, a couple weeks ago.
Sure. Yeah,
it's always a jam-packed conference.
Yeah, lots of things to focus on. And I really love that the monk seal program is not just focusing on community and the scientists and, you know, targeting all different types of people and advocating and educating about monk seals. You guys have been very creative through this process. And I know there's been like a monk seal endangered species chocolate bar. There's been a monk seal rogue beer. What can we expect next? And what is some of the creative thinking behind this? You don't really get that kind of outreach coming from government organizations often.
Well, a lot of credit for that goes to our amazing partners. The Rogue Beer collaboration was the Waikiki Aquarium. The chocolate bar, the Marine Mammal Center, I believe, was heavily involved in that one. So that's where a lot of these partnerships come into play, is that we're really able to achieve a lot more when we put together nonprofits, agencies, community, and bring all those resources together. it's fun to, and it's a good way to break out of these traditional kind of outreach modes and do these interesting sort of non-preachy. They don't come across as educational. It's just exposure, and it's fun and interesting and speaking to people on a level that I think they're not necessarily used to. And so this year, I mentioned the art show. That's an avenue that we're going for. We're trying to look at Monk's Seals in a creative and new way that we possibly haven't done before. We're going to be putting out a call to artists to try to get local folks. We're working with an artist on the mainland who went on the cruise last year. And so we'll be featuring some art that's created based on her inspiration from spending time in the Northwesterns.
I imagine that that experience has got to be fairly unique to being able to go out for a summer and camp out in the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands and help to conserve and work towards understanding a very rare marine mammal species population. Have either of you done the monk seal camps, or what's the general experience like for people that come back and participate in these camps?
I haven't done a whole camp. I would love to have. I have had the opportunity to spend just short-term stays out there, and it was it's incredible. It's unlike anywhere. It's interesting, too, because you're so far away from everything, and you're so isolated and untouched, and yet at the same time, there's all this marine debris and these, you know, unfortunate reminders that no matter how remote, you know, the impact does reach there. So it's this interesting juxtaposition of being out there and seeing these things. Michelle has been up there a few more times than I have. So
I haven't had the ability to do an entire season either, but it just sounds amazing. However, I also think it really is a lot of work too. You know, there are so many challenges that the field camp folks face out there. We have to prepare them for things like tsunamis, and we've had hurricane evacuations and things like that. So I have just so much respect for the courage that they all have out there every season to do this work, to be away from their families, to be in this beautiful place and get to know it really from top to bottom. But it is a pretty amazing challenge that they all accept when they're out for the season.
And I mean, I think the personal stories behind the people working in the conservation and the science is really important too. I mean, did you wake up when you were kids and say, hey, I'm going to go save the Hawaiian monk seal? How did your path bring you to doing this type of work?
Well, for me, it was growing up on the Chesapeake Bay, and the critters that lived in the oceans were the things that were at the end of the bay. So that was like the new frontier for me. I was familiar with crabs and oysters and, you know, rockfish and things like that. But marine mammals were this amazing thing that lived all the way down there at the ocean. And so for me, it was just the allure of what was yet to be discovered and understood.
And you did work in veterinary medicine. So how did you go from vet school, you know, probably working with more domestic animals, to marine mammals?
I did things a little bit opposite than many people. So I actually started out with marine biology and did a master's in marine biology. And I was really interested in the things that we could learn about how marine mammals work and how they're adapted to their environment. And from a comparative sense, that led me into research that was focused on understanding their physiology, and also that kind of blends into health. So for me, it became, oh, well, you know, if I went to vet school, I would be able to do a hands-on type of job to help these animals directly, and also conduct research that would help us understand the health of the population in a bigger picture. And all of that relating to conservation was really the key. So I ended up going to vet school after starting my studies in marine biology, and then put it all together later.
Very cool story. I like that little twist on it. I didn't know that. Angela, what about you?
I grew up in the Monterey Bay Area in California, and I really have to credit my mom. She worked at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and so I spent many, many, many hours as a kid just running around that place and marveling at everything. We would go down to the wharf and look at the sea lions. We'd go out on whale watching boats. And so that was really something that was instilled to me from a very young age, is that this is important. These are things that should be understood and valued. And so I don't know that I grew up knowing that that's exactly what I wanted to do, but it grew up just being at the very center of my ethos and what's important to me.
Well, I love those stories. It's always interesting to hear how people got into what they're doing and inspire the next generation. So people that want to learn more about monk seals and maybe inspire the next conservationist or monk seal scientist, where can they go to learn more information?
So our websites are unfortunately really long and unwieldy, so I'm just going to give the very simple, if you Google NOAA, N-O-A-A, and monk seal, the first two hits will be the recovery program and the research program. And so that's an easy way to do it. We have on Facebook, the Hawaiian Monk Seal Research Program has a page. They share a lot of really great information on what our program is doing, what our partners are doing, and other ways to get involved. I mentioned Hawaii Marine Mammal Alliance's page. KKOLA, the Marine Mammal Center, also has a webpage. So these are all great resources for just finding out some basics about biology and conservation, as well as things that you can do to help.
And we're always accessible, too. I mean, we definitely want people to know that if they have questions, anything we've talked about today is of particular interest or confusing in any way, we are here to help. So we want to do that as well.
Well, thank you so much to both of you for taking some time to talk to us about monk seals and some really interesting and important issues. I'm so glad I've learned more about toxoplasmosis. I'd like to give a special thanks to our sponsor, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet. And monk seals.